Blog Talk Radio.
Another wild and woolly week, huh?
bypass.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing today, Butch? And how you doing?
Doing great.
How
about yourself?
Well with everyone. I'm good. I'm good.
Doing well. Doing well. Doing well.
Are you doing all right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing well. It's been a wonderful week. I'm glad to be back with you guys.
Good. Good. Hey, guys. I think we would be remiss, being a boxing show, not to to honor one of the all-time greats, Mr. Muhammad Ali. His 73rd birthday today, so we wanted to wish him and his family all the success and health, and we can't say enough about the guy. What a great fighter, a great ambassador for the sport, and I hope he has an enjoyable 73rd birthday.
Yes, Muhammad Ali was a truly transcendent, is, even to this day, in his state, a truly transcendent figure. So
it's almost like if you went to look up boxing in the encyclopedia, his picture would be right there. He meant that much to the sport.
Well, you know, and I think to a certain extent, because of the way he conducted himself socially and the stances he took, I think he's also become somewhat of a standard bearer for athletes, whether they follow that example or not, though. I think he is the standard bearer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we had some a week of a lot of trash talk by Stiverne over at Wilder, and he even comes in outweighing Wilder tonight at by 20 pounds. What do you think about that?
Well, I should say Stiverne's weight. He weighed in at, I believe, 240, which is maybe a pound lighter than he weighed for Areola. He's right on target. That is his general weight. Deontay Wilder looks fabulous. He looks very lean. 219 at 6'6 and a half. He's smaller than LeBron James as far as, you know, girth. So he's not, you know, a 6'6", 240-pound guy like Vladimir Klitschko. He's not that big. But, you know, for what both guys normally bring into the ring, Deontay's typically a little over 220. Stiverne's right between 238, 242. Both guys are in fighting shape for the, you know, for what they normally bring to the ring. As far as the trash talk, Deontay Wilder has been talking a lot. And it started because Bermaine Stiverne felt, you know, Stiverne felt minimized to some extent. And so both guys are really promising to hurt each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw one thing from Wilder that said, I'm not going in there to box him. I'm going in there to destroy him. Z, you're our technical expert. How about breaking down the type of fighters we're going to be looking at?
Well, for Wilder to go destroy Stiverne, then he's going to have to box him. He's not going to go in there and toe-to-toe with Stiverne. He could talk a bit of that, but in all reality, his game plan is to box. If his game plan is to go in there and slug it out, it's not going to last that long at all, and it's not going to be good for him. With that said, they both are basically in their right shapes, their right weight. It's all on if Wilder is still totally raw, because he can't go in there totally green. If he goes in there still, you know, we understand that he's still not an expert, and he's still not as skilled as he maybe potentially can be, although, you know, he's not the youngest guy. What I see is I just see a lot of waiting on both ends. Wilder's going to try to keep it long, and Stiverne, you know, without getting caught, and Stiverne's going to basically be waiting to catch Wilder, waiting to throw some bursts, waiting for his opportunity. With that said, it's going to be who gets hit sharper. And I think Stiverne is, Bermondy is sharper. He's a sharper puncher than Wilder. Wilder, he tends to throw wide, tends not to set his punches up as much. And that can get him caught. So, and, you know, by the big punchers, whoever gets caught, usually the sharpest or first, that's the one who goes.
You know, Wilder is 29 years old, which is, you know, he's actually pretty young for a heavyweight. He's very green, but for a heavyweight, that's not bad because we all know those guys mature a little later, and they tend to have a more extended career than the lighter, smaller guys. With that said, Wilder's only been boxing 9 years, literally. Not professional boxing, only been boxing like 9-10 years. Stiverne is definitely the more fluid athlete with tremendous physical gifts. But the fact of the matter is Wilder's physical attributes and his athleticism and his power are in question. His power at the highest level is something, you know, we're hoping to see tonight. But his power is in question. His physical attributes are in question. What it is, though, is that we know he is not, at this point, the boxer that a Burmese Stiverne is. The question is he a good enough specimen, or is he that special where he can overcome his deficiency in boxing and win the fight based on the amount of craft he has coupled with his athleticism, his height, and his range? He feels he can win the fight on athleticism alone. I do not necessarily feel that. I don't think he feels that. I think he said that. 219 shows me he doesn't feel that. It shows me he's taking this really serious as he should. But the fact of the matter is, outside of Chris Areola, Stiverne's resume is not too different than Deontay Wilder's resume, actually. But the fact of the matter is we've seen Stiverne go 12 hard with Areola. We've seen him fight Areola again, make it, you know, not necessarily make adjustments, but even do better the second time as he should. So there are more question marks surrounding Deontay Wilder. That's what makes this fight so interesting.
Who would you choose for the winner, Ty?
I'm sorry?
Who do you think is going to win?
You know what? Right now, I'd have to go with the champ, Burmese Stiverne. I feel the fight could go either way. I think it's a, you know, it's a 50-50 pick'em fight, and I think most boxing experts have seen it that way. And part of the reason why is because if Deontay Wilder is real, if he is the real deal, he's going to beat Burmese Stiverne. If he is not, he's going to get exposed. So all the questions are with Wilder. One thing we know about Stiverne, I don't think he's necessarily special in any area. I'm not sure he'd beat a Povetkin, but one thing I know is the guy's a very solid, durable pro. And to this point, that's something that Wilder hasn't truly faced. So right now I got to lean towards Stiverne.
Absolutely. And you have to look at what each guy can do in the ring. We know that Deontay has the power edge, but who can do more things? And it's all about that. As I say, Deontay athletically could do a lot of things, but when it comes down to it, boxing's not all the time athletics. It's, you know, 90% in your head. So, and I have to go with the guy who has more in his head at this point. Just because, I mean, Stiverne is not a worn out or anything from any wars.
No, he's 36, but he's a very fresh 36.
Exactly. They both are fresh. So you have to go with the guy who, to be honest, who could do more in the ring. At this stage, Deontay, that power, it could take you a long way. But, you know, once you reach a certain level, you know, the buck has to stop somewhere.
I also think the very opening minutes and opening seconds of this fight will tell you a lot, you know, as to how it's going to go. One thing that Wilder pointed out was that he thought Chris Areola's style was kind of tailor-made for Stiverne. I cannot disagree with him on that. Areola comes forward. He has a tendency to push his punches, but he also has a tendency to allow his chin to go past his front knee, and so he's leaning in a little forward. He's open for counter shots, and Stiverne's a good counter puncher. And so Wilder, keeping range and distance, which I think, you know, I'm pretty sure his trainer is going to have him do. I'm pretty sure Mark Breland is going to have him use his range and his distance. With that being said, that doesn't play into Burmese's hands as far as what we saw from the Chris Areola fight. One thing Stiverne said is, let him think I'm going to fight like that. So, again, this goes back and harkens to what Z said. You know, Stiverne, if he fights the way he fought Areola, then he could be a sitting duck for you know, a wild or long right hand. But because he can do more in the ring, as Zito said, chances are he's not going to fight like that through the whole fight. He may set traps like he did for Areola, but expect him to come full burst and stay in his chest a little bit too.
Yeah, and the guy that comes forward and thinks offense is tailor made for anybody who usually can box. So I mean, just that flows into what anybody who can box, a boxer or a counterpuncher. They usually kill guys like that. So
and that's
Deontay's
problem. He's not at this point. If Stavern does.
Sorry about that.
No, no problem. I was saying, and it's funny, at this point, Z is, 100% accurate. But what's funny is at this point, if Stavern chooses to get into Deontay's chest, at this point in Deontay's career, he's not necessarily a competent boxer who will be able to keep Stavern off of him unless he can hurt him. Of course, he's very capable of hurting him. But to this point, I don't know if his footwork is good enough. I mean, he has great range. But outside of hurting Stavern, I don't know if he could keep Stavern off of him with his boxing acumen and his ring generalship. That's not something I could see him doing for 12 rounds at this stage in his career. Again, it's just to me, it comes down to Deontay Wilder is a specimen. He is a freak, and he has unquestionable power. But with all that saying, what you're looking for, because you don't know what kind of boxing acumen he has, you don't know how his stamina will hold up over 12 rounds, you don't know if he could take a punch. What you're saying essentially is that, you know what, because this guy's a big freak, he has a puncher's chance against a better boxer. And when that puncher doesn't land that punch, it becomes a different fight.
Absolutely. You can't have a puncher's chance against everyone.
No.
It just doesn't work that way.
Well, I know that our two physician cohorts that are on every now and then are listening from Puerto Rico, and I guess it cost them too much money to call in tonight because they're supposed to call in. But
where they're probably at Puerto Rico, they each only get one call, I think, when you get arrested.
They're at the 19th hole, I'm sure.
Oh, okay, so they haven't got locked up yet.
Not yet. Just give them a couple more days. Even if they did, both of them would try to talk their way out of it.
All of a sudden, we'll be reading on CNN that the United States is at war with Puerto Rico. Impossible. Impossible.
The only hostages that were taken were federal.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know if they were here, Chris would be, he's all over Wilder. He loves, he thinks he's a pretty decent fighter and would probably be on that one. So just so I got this straight. Ty, you're for Stavern. Z, you were for Wilder,
I think
Stavern's
going to win.
I'm for Stavern.
Stavern, yeah. And I'm Stavern. So, okay, it's 3-1, Chris. You got to call in now. trying to move along here. Let's talk about Kovalev finally getting his super belt from the WBO. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, he definitely did. First of all, it's a farce. It's a travesty.
Yeah.
He's the WBO champion. Why does he need to be the super champion? He is universally regarded as the most feared light heavyweight on the planet. In the Ring magazine, he's rated number 2 only because Adonis Stevenson has the lineal title, but everyone, right now, Kovalev is the true man of the division. Why does he need a super title? If he has a super title, you know what that means? That means that somebody else who's not deserving of a title has a regular title. And typically what that also means is that somebody else who's not deserving of a title may have an interim title. So it's just a farce. But Kovalev deserves whatever recognition he's supposed to get.
Yeah, he's the best light heavyweight on the planet. Right now, I mean, Pascal, that fight's going to look good for a little bit, but it's going to ultimately lead to Kovalev being the best light heavyweight on the planet.
Yeah. And until he loses, I have to agree with you. He's fought better competition than the reigning lineal light heavyweight king. And, he beat the former lineal light heavyweight king in Bernard Hopkins. So, yeah, I mean, he is the unquestioned guy at light heavyweight. So whatever honors that the sanctioning bodies want to bestow upon him, I'm all for. It's just that when you say super champ, that automatically lets you know that there's a regular champ, and that's just ridiculous, obviously. So.
I liked it better when he had one champ.
I tell you guys the big news of the week, and the guy I want to give an early kudos to is Mr. Al Haymon.
That's right.
Al Haymon was universally panned, in boxing boards and through boxing writers as being, at least partially, if not 100%, responsible for not getting the matchups we were looking forward to in 2014. Everybody was thinking, you know, Peterson was supposed to fight Danny Garcia, and this person was supposed to fight that person. What happened to Keith, who was what's Keith's last name? Jesus, Keith Thurman. Yeah, what happened to Keith Thurman, who you know, just had two kind of light fights last year, even though he had the shoulder injury, people were still wondering. And then we find out that Al Heyman's taking over Kathy Duva's deal with NBC Sports. Right. And, again, the boxing world starts to panic. One thing we know about Kathy, she didn't have all the biggest diamonds in her stables, but, man, she matched them tough, and she put on great fights. Well, Al Heyman has come out the gate swinging. His first card is going to feature Adrian Broner against John Molina, a very good test for Adrian Broner, a fight that, you know, both of them have a path to victory. And the main event is Keith Thurman against Robert Guerrero. Yeah, that's a fight that was supposed to be made, you know, a fight that was offered to Guerrero a few years back. He didn't take it. He's taking it now because the money, the national platform is worth it to him. And that's a very, very good test for Keith. So after that, his April card is going to feature the match we've been waiting for, Peterson against Garcia. So what it's letting me believe is that what Al Heyman did is he held these matches back last year because he knew that, look, I'm looking for this TV deal for my own self. He looked for his own platform. Once he had his platform, then he said, you know what, now that this is my platform, I'm going to give the fans the fights they want to see so I can bring in these ratings. I mean, smart business. If you think it was for the betterment of boxing, that's your opinion. But very, very smart business. Another thing, if you look at what Al Heyman's done, in a sense, he's kind of followed a business model in a sense that Aram put together with Pacquiao. There was a while where Pacquiao was only fighting top-ranked guys. And because Pacquiao was exclusive to HBO, it's Pacquiao fighting top-ranked guys on HBO. All the money goes to Bob Arum, no co-promotions. Well, now that Al Heyman has this deal with NBC Sports, and he has a stable of 50 to 60 fighters, and he's, you know, constantly signing more, what he's essentially done is created almost like his own league, in a sense. I mean, he can go and sign anybody to fight, like John Molina. I don't believe John Molina was one of his, but of course John Molina is going to take some good money to fight on national TV against Adrian Broner. So what he's done is essentially created his own platform and his own league to where his guys can fight each other. So all of a sudden, a hot, young, undefeated prospect like Keith Thurman, if he loses, he's not out the water. You know, usually somebody loses and they got to, oh, my God, he's done. All of a sudden, you know, he still has the platform. He still has the fighters to where if Keith were to lose to a Robert Guerrero, by the end of the year, Keith could be back in a ring with another quality 147-pounder to get him right back in the mix. So from a business standpoint, Al Heyman has proven his genius, and it looks like 2015 is already going to be a better year than 2014 was.
In talking to
Dan Birmingham, I can tell you that Al Heyman has about six or seven other people he's going to be announcing by the end of the month that he has signed and has some really outstanding fights lined up for them. So it's going to be a banner year for the Heyman group, that's for sure.
Yeah, and one thing I totally believe in is that the better matchmaking you have, the more lucrative it is to boxing.
Sure. That's like Dan was saying on here, you know, he's got Edner there in his stable, and Edner has had representation by two different companies in the last 4 years, but yet has not been able to move up because of the fights that he's getting. He's not getting the right kind of fights. So this is supposed to be a banner year for him, so let's see where that goes from there. Godzi, I interrupted you, guy. Or time.
You know, the big non-news of the week, and I call it non-news because, and it's funny, Zito said this, until they're both signing in a ring, staring across from each other, and the ref said, you know, ring the bell, and you hear ding, ding. The non-news of the week to me was that Pacquiao has agreed to all of Floyd Mayweather's terms. He signed his end of the contract. He's waiting for Floyd Mayweather to sign his contract. This happened like Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
So the boxing world is now waiting for Floyd to sign the contract so everyone can have this fight that they want to see. The very next thing I read in the news, like Thursday, is that the negotiations are now being held up because of the rival networks, HBO, Showtime. Obviously, Floyd fights for Showtime, Pacquiao for HBO. So it was so funny. I sent Zito the article where it said Pacquiao signed, you know, the contract, and Zito responded back, "I'll believe it basically when I see it." And literally a day later, I read that now negotiations are being held up once again. So it's just a never-ending story, as Doug Fisher would say.
Yeah,
we've been through this dance.
I just
before.
Pulled that up. It's according to multiple sources, that long-awaited clash between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao is getting closer to fruition. They've come to terms. The venue is set. The drug tests are set. And now the only thing holding it up, HBO and Showtime are hashing out the pay-per-view details.
Which could explain why Floyd hasn't signed as well either, because obviously we know with the Showtime fights, he always is going to get, if when he was fighting for HBO, he'd get a percentage of the pay-per-view. He's fighting for Showtime, he gets a percentage of the pay-per-view. Well, what happens if HBO co-promotes this? And I think he's probably looking at that. You know what I mean? How does that affect his percentage? So that could be one reason why he hasn't signed the contract as of yet. The other issue, and this is something that's not out there, you know, in the boxing wires or on the media, but a lot of speculation is, we all know that Canelo Alvarez was trying to get that May 2nd date to fight Miguel Cotto, and he said, "Hey, if I get Miguel Cotto, I'm taking over that." He said, "I'm taking over Mexican Cinco de Mayo back to the Mexicans," and that was the big fight they were targeting for Cinco de Mayo, he and Cotto. Well, Canelo had essentially agreed to everything, and you know, he's used to being the A side, and you know, obviously so is Cotto, and you know, Cotto's a pretty tough negotiator. He reminds me of a young Sugar Ray Robinson, as far as negotiation. But the thing is that Cotto has never responded. We knew he was taking the rest of the year off, but his people still haven't gotten back to Alvarez's people. So Alvarez and De La Hoya said, "Look, we're tired of waiting for Cotto, and we're looking to move on." So there's some talk. Aram has said, "Hey, why don't, you know, Canelo fight Bradley?" Because Bradley's always talking about that fight. But the speculation is that a lot of people feel that Cotto may not have responded as of yet to Alvarez because, on the side, he is waiting to see what happens between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, because he would get a more lucrative fight with Floyd Mayweather, possibly. So a lot of people are speculating that if you see Cotto not necessarily moving in any direction and the Pacquiao-Floyd negotiation stalling, don't be surprised if all of a sudden we got Floyd against Cotto in May 2nd. So, you know, it's a big soap opera.
Sure. Well, you know, we had talked about this before. Dubai had offered over $200 million for that to be, this fight to be taken care of over there. And you had pointed out, they are trying to be the fighting capital of the world. Given the fact that MGM and all the casinos are having major financial difficulties now that some of the tax benefits are off, do you think that Mayweather would ever sign not to fight at MGM and to take that extra $50 million or $60 million to go to Dubai?
Got a chance.
Yeah. Floyd's all about control.
First of all, typically with Floyd or Mayweather promotions, or even when he was co-promoting with De La Hoya promotions, what they typically would do is reserve the MGM Grand ahead of time.
Right.
So typically when he says he has his fight dates, you know, Cinco de Mayo and Mexican Independence Day holiday, the September and May dates, usually what's happened is the MGM Grand is already reserved for those dates. And the other thing you have to remember when Floyd Mayweather was about to go to jail, they postponed, the Nevada court system essentially postponed his incarceration so he could still fight, because they were fearful of the economic windfall if that fight were not to take place. So regardless of what's happening in Vegas, they want Floyd to fight there because he brings money in, to the point to where the judicial system said, "Hey, we can't afford to have this guy not fight. He could go to jail after." So there is no way, no way on earth he fights in Dubai.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, earlier you said something about Al Haymon and his group. They made the announcement a little earlier. We did talk about Adrian Broner and Robert Guerrero, right? And Molina.
Yeah, Thurman and Molina, yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I missed that part. by the way, we did have a call in from Dr. Ron. He is under the weather, didn't get a chance to get to Puerto Rico this week. We wish him all the best and speedy recovery because this flu going around is really a terrible thing.
Yeah.
So, Ron, I know you're still listening, but he was on, and we talked offline, but we'll get. He said he's going to get with Chris when he gets down there. Let me ask you guys, what do you think about this Hank Lundy thing? There seems to be more and more press on it. And I'm not really sure that it's worth all the press that they're getting.
No.
What do you think?
Well, Hank Lundy's an entertaining fighter, first of all. He gives you, as I mentioned before, he gives you everything in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. He gives you skill. He gives you power. He gives you a chinny guy who's capable of getting knocked out. But, I mean, you know, Hank Lundy's on the fringe. And it seems that he's always staying on the fringe. So you might have a point to the press you're talking about he's getting.
Well, here's what I think. I know the press is decreeing him because he didn't make weight for the ESPN opening night fight. And he missed it by 4 pounds. But the fact of the matter is that Hank Lundy just fought a few months ago. It was a very quick turnaround, and he took the fight on 2 weeks' notice. Now, this is a guy who fought less than like 2 months ago and took this fight on 2 weeks' notice. So I think a pass is given. Hank Lundy's not a guy who normally misses weight. So I do think it's much ado about nothing. I think it's a non-issue. And I think because he took the fight on such short notice, and because it was such a quick turnaround, it's not like he fought 8 months ago and took the fight, you know, on 2 weeks' notice. He just fought. And he's taking this fight on 2 weeks' notice. So, no, I think he deserves a pass. And I think that the media scrutiny about it is I think it's outrageous.
Overblown.
Completely. Completely. This is a guy who – he's not Joan Guzman. You know what I mean? This is a guy who doesn't miss weight. It's not a guy who's fat all the time and never makes weight. It's a guy who doesn't miss weight. He took the fight on. Hank Lundy is, first of all, he's a fringe contender. And he wasn't fighting. Peter Petroff is another fringe contender. So it's not like he was fighting a champion trying to get a belt in 2 weeks. He just said, hey, you know what? I lost my last fight by split decision. Yeah, I'll fight on ESPN. I could use the money, and I need to get back in the mix. And he just didn't make weight. I think it was an aggressive attempt by him to even try to take the fight anyway against a quality guy on 2 weeks' notice. So, no, I think you've got to give the guy a pass.
Sure.
See? Yeah. Hank Lundy, you could tell that he's a dedicated guy to his sport, to his craft, I should say. I mean, the guy, as I say, he's an entertaining guy. He gives you everything in the ring. And he comes prepared. I mean, he comes prepared. He's not a guy who's going to sit there and throw punches for 2 rounds and then huff and puff. I can't say he has the best gas tank, but he has all fight in him. So, I mean, yeah, that is, you know, this is overblown, especially for Hank Lundy. I mean, there are other guys that you could say, higher, you know, level guys that you could say this about with more scrutiny.
Oh, and by the way, what's going on with Klitschko, Brian Jennings? I just recently read this. The reason why, you know, that fight seemed like a done deal for the Barclays Center, I believe in April. I could be wrong about the date, April, March. But all of a sudden what stopped that in its tracks was when Roc Nation, Jay-Z's company, one of the things they've just recently done is they merged with Gary Shaw Productions. Gary Shaw was is Bryant Jennings' promoter. And because of that deal, it's changed, obviously, the business. And so, you know, not due to any fault of Bryant Jennings, and not even his promoter. It was a good business move for Gary Shaw. It's going to benefit Bryant Jennings down the road, but that's why that fight right now is at a standstill.
And I think that's good for Jennings as far as actual the fight, because he's another guy who came into boxing late and took to it well. But I just think that he needs some more fights underneath his belt, some more experience, especially against these tall, long guys.
Yeah. And, you know, Bryant Jennings, again, kind of like Deontay Wilder. Now, Bryant Jennings isn't the biggest guy like a Deontay Wilder who looks like he could, you know, in that kind of shape and that size, you know, he could get better, just like Tony Thompson, because he started late, but he's a big heavyweight. He just got better and better. Same thing could happen to a Deontay Wilder. But outside of that, you know, Bryant Jennings is a young guy. He's not a big guy. He definitely could use some more seasoning. And, again, you take your shot when you can get it. But 3, 4, 5 years from now, Bryant Jennings could still be around and Klitschko could be gone. And there is no one outside of Klitschko who I wouldn't give Bryant Jennings a chance against in the heavyweight division. I'm not saying he beats everybody, but I don't think anybody outside of Klitschko dominates him at this point, you know?
Yeah, he's not an easy out. Not an easy out. And he's learning more and more each fight. To where he doesn't have the physical attributes that Deontay Wilder has. But, he's taking more to what he has to do in the ring.
Yeah.
Bryant Jennings, he can back you up and go to the body. He also can jab from the outside, move his feet. I mean, so he has a variety of tools he can use. Not the fastest
guy. And he can fight inside, too.
Oh, yeah. Nice uppercuts. Moves his head pretty good. One thing I'm gonna say though is he has a thing with timing at times, to where his timing, you know, seems off, and that comes with experience.
So
as far as that goes, I definitely think a few fights before he fights anybody, well, Klitschko's on his own caliber, but you know, on that level, a few fights will do him good.
Yeah, I would like to see him against an Areola, you know, someone of that ilk, you know?
I would like to see him, like, against a David Price.
I wouldn't want to see that. I don't think he would beat David Price, but unless he was planning on fighting Klitschko 2 or 3 fights down the road, I wouldn't necessarily. But, yeah, I don't think David Price's people would do that. I don't think it'd be smart for them to do that, but that would be an interesting fight to see how he would do against a taller guy. It'd be interesting to see how he'd do against a guy like Tony. You know, a taller guy who's going to offer him a different look. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, the other one I wanted to bring up was our good friend Danny Batchelder, who I'm trying to get a hold of, just had a fight I guess he must be fighting back down in Louisiana, in Opelousas, Louisiana, and he took the guy out in the first round, 2 minutes and 10 seconds into the first round, Danny took him out. So the guy's name was Dwight Gibson, Gibson.
Well, congratulations, Danny. Good job.
And bare knuckle Batchelder. Was it a glove fight?
This one was a glove fight, if I believe, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, Dan, we've been trying to get a hold of him. And Danny, if I know you listen, if you would give us a call, we'd love to get you back on. Danny's, he's just above Aaron and just below, he's just above Aaron and Edner as being the most interviewed on this show. Boxer that we've had.
Danny's a good guy, and we always wish him luck, and it's good to see he's doing well and that, you know, he's plugging away at his career and things are working out for his benefit. That's really good news.
Yeah, and Danny stays busy. I mean, he's been
Bare-knuckle
fight not too long ago up in Pennsylvania.
Right,
so,
up at Bethlehem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
and that he won in the first round too. He won that in the, I think like 37 seconds into the first round, he knocked the guy out.
Well, if Danny's only getting a minute to 2 minutes of ring time every fight, then damn, he might as well stay busy. Shit. I mean, obviously, you don't get paid for overtime. You only go to work, punching the clock for 15 minutes. Psh, I might as well work every day. Just why not?
Sure.
Good for him, man.
And speaking of Aaron Jaco, Aaron's going to fight Angel Martinez at the Alucard Pavilion in 2 weeks in Tampa, Florida, which he'll probably win that, and that'll put him 18-3 with six knockouts. So the only one that he wasn't successful in the last 2 years was Kelly Pavlik, and he just said it. He had never been hit that hard in all his life.
He
said the one. The one shot that he got, he saw his daughter's face in front of him, and he had to stop right there.
What I like about Aaron is first and foremost, Aaron's a great guy, and you know he's a smart businessman. And what I like about him is where he's at with his career. He likes to box. He likes to fight. And he right now, he has no aspirations per se on being a world champion. He's like, hey, you know, I want to fight a couple more fights and have some fun. And I think that's awesome, man.
Yeah, he's dedicated to training in his gym. I know him and his brother, they have separate gyms down there. But
yes.
I know
he has
definitely dedicated to training in the gym. Always talks about it.
They're in separate buildings, but they both train each other. His brother does train him for fights, and then Adam has a great stable of young fighters. He's bringing the Golden Gloves back to life here in Florida. And their gyms are, I believe, about less than a mile away from each other. But two great guys, two fantastic guys, and you know their father Dave was a hell of a boxer, and today he made a lot of money at one time, and I know he had one fight that he came away with a purse. This is back, I guess, in the 80s. Came away with like $10,000 in his pocket. By the end of the night, it was gone.
Oh,
so,
wow.
He didn't really plan for retirement. So, but Dave is still a great guy. He's here locally, does come into the gym. He has another a younger family now. Aaron is training his two younger sisters to box. But
awesome.
On their own, they are terrific basketball players and volleyball players. So
am I to assume they're tall, rangy girls?
Yes, they are. They got a long reach. Yeah.
So we got some female Tommy Hearns he's got going on, huh?
Good possibility. Good possibility.
All right.
Yep, and it runs in the blood. So we'll see what happens in the next few years. I'm going to I'll try and give Dave Tiberi a call again. What about you guys know anything about Mikey Perez and the Dingling Man?
Mikey Perez, please tell me Mike Perez. Well, I was going to say, please tell me Mike Perez is not fighting the Dingling Man. The Dingling Man was just destroyed at a card that Zito and I were at. Mike Perez, and maybe part of the reason why he would be fighting a Dingling Man is, as you know, he just recently had won some type of interim or USBA title, but he tested positive for a banned substance, and so that title was stripped from him, and I believe he received a suspension. So coming back from that, you know, maybe a Dingling Man is a good way to knock the rust off while you knock the dingling off. Did I just say
whack
the dingling off, though, did I?
Okay, we're going to stop that, but we're going to get back to focus. A fight between Perez and the Dingling Man, it's going to last, if the ding and ring man is going to last three rounds, after the third round, they're going to lean on each other. Because neither one has any sort of stamina to do anything effective past that.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's a shame because Perez really does have good craft.
He's a very skillful guy.
And going into his fight with Brian Jennings, I really knew that that would tell me where Brian Jennings was at. Zito called it. He figured Jennings would win just on conditioning alone. I figured Jennings would win, well, you know, I was going to say because he would outwork Perez primarily because of conditioning alone. but with that said, what we knew is for the first two rounds, we would learn a lot about Brian Jennings because Perez is a very, very craftful fighter. And what you got to see was a guy who was trained by the Cuban amateur system against a guy who came into the sport late. It's just that Brian Jennings is incredibly fluid, and he's incredibly skilled for a guy who came into the sport late. But you couldn't quite make up that gulf when Perez was fresh because of Perez's excellence in craft.
And that's the thing. I'm not sure if it's Perez's training or that's just how he is physically. He's just going to be that way. But he's way too effective to only be effective for three, maybe 2.5 rounds.
Yeah.
And then, he still can hit you all during the fight because he's that good. But, he'll hit you and he'll have his arms down so he's not going to get out the way of anything coming back. He'll lean straight back
his
without
all
moving
the time.
His feet.
Yeah.
He'll get lazy. He'll get lazy because of his condition. And it just seems like a waste to a point.
And you know what? That has been the criticism from the boxing community with a lot of Cuban fighters is that once they defect at the time to the United States and started living under the United States government and the way we do things over here, that taste of freedom and the excesses of, you know, the American lifestyle kind of got to them. And so they weren't as dedicated athletes. Even though they were still dedicated to their craft, they're not dedicated as athletes the way they were in Cuba. And that's what some people believe. Whether it's true or not, I think it's only speculation. However, I think Perez, Orlando Solis, those are two pretty good examples of guys who did not keep their level of conditioning anywhere near what it was like in the amateurs once they got to the States.
And they're heavier guys also.
Yeah, yep.
Seems like the heavier
guys. They didn't
have
to make weight. They don't have to make weight. So, yeah. But they're not like guys like you know, who had to make weight. Like, what's our buddy's name? Casamayor, Joel Casamayor. He had to make weight. Of course, he smoked weed, but he made weight, and he was never out of shape. He just smoked weed. He probably couldn't do that in Cuba, so I don't know. But it just seems like you see a lot of these guys, until this new breed, and this new breed being Yuriorkis Gamboa, who, you know, his thing's in activity and management, but he was always in shape and always ready to fight. Guillermo Rigondeaux, Erislande Lara, these guys are the consummate professionals. And you didn't see that with, you know, with the Perez or Solis, two guys who, to a certain extent, are kind of floundering their potential.
What about your good friend? Canelo Alvarez.
Well, he, like I said before, he's just waiting to see what Miguel Cotto is going to do. Aram threw out the name Tim Bradley. Bradley had said before like a year ago that he wanted to fight Alvarez. He thinks that would be a great fight. He thinks he matches up with Alvarez well, whether that's true or not. So right now, Alvarez is looking. He gave Oscar De La Hoya the green light to begin negotiating with other people. I'm sure if Aram is throwing out Tim Bradley to Alvarez, that probably from a matchup standpoint would be favorable to De La Hoya. From a stealing Mexican Independence Day standpoint, Bradley is an elite fighter. He's not an elite ticket seller. He's not an elite pay-per-view numbers guy. He's a good B-side, but that's not going to move Floyd off of May 2nd, and that's not going to make people turn from a Floyd fight to Canelo's fight. So though Bradley's mentioned it'd be a pretty good fight for Canelo, it could command pay-per-view. I still think they're looking for a bigger name. Who they'll seek out, I don't know. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, my question would be, didn't Tim Bradley not too long ago move up from junior welterweight?
It's been a couple of years now, actually. Yeah,
a couple of years. All right, and Canelo, I don't even recall him being a welterweight, to be honest.
Yeah, he fought welterweight like the first couple fights of his career or something when he was probably like 12.
I don't see that as good for Bradley. I don't care how much weight he gains. Canelo's not moving down to fight him.
Bradley fought in the amateurs at like 147. He's kind of like a Sean Porter who was fighting at 160 at one time. Bradley's a stocky dude. However, he still would be the smaller man. He doesn't have power at 140. He didn't have power at 140. He doesn't have power at 147. Not only will he not have power at 154, but now he's not even going to have a decided strength edge. He has basically over a lot of people at 140 and 147. Even though he's a smaller guy, so compact, so muscular, and such great conditioning, that he tends to, through the fight, own a strength edge. That's not going to happen with Canelo. He's not going to be pushing Canelo back at all.
And Bradley could take a shot at any weight. But, he's not taking shots from a guy, 6 pounds away from middleweight. Especially Canelo. Canelo can deliver shots to your body to where – and Bradley, he's open. He has a tendency to be open. Against Canelo, that's a terrible matchup. I just think it's an absolute terrible matchup.
And it doesn't surprise me. That Arum, and I don't want to say would throw Bradley out there. It's a fight Bradley's been calling for a little bit. But it doesn't surprise me that that's a fight Arum would open Bradley up to. It doesn't surprise me at all. But again, I think Golden Boy and Canelo, because they had Miguel Cotto in sight, is looking for something a little bigger, especially if they're looking at trying to take that Cinco de Mayo date away from Floyd Mayweather. But again, Cotto could, come to the table and, then that fight, and Bob Arum said this, if he fights Manny, we'll move the date. And Oscar De La Hoya, everybody's like, hey, if he fights Manny, if they fight, we'll move the date. But again, outside of Miguel Cotto, what huge names, huge moneymakers, pay-per-view names are there for Canelo Alvarez? No one I could think of at 154.
Here's a chance for both of you to be a matchmaker. Kell Brook is supposed to announce on Monday that who his next opponent's going to be. They already have a date. All right, let's go. Ty, who do you think his opponent will be?
Well, it's no fair. I already know. He's fighting, you know me. I'm up on everything. He's fighting Antoine Decore. So obviously this is his. It's not that Decore's not a solid professional, but he's not elite. And so this is Kell Brook's victory lap. He came over to the States. He won the title. He's fighting in the UK. He deserves the victory lap. He's just coming off of getting stabbed in his leg. He deserves, this is his little victory lap. And then look for them to try to make a Khan fight later in the year. Khan was obviously, holding out for the Mayweather fight. He said, if no Mayweather, he wants Pacquiao. Khan has literally been calling everyone out. He's like, I want Mayweather. And then when, Floyd Mayweather is not getting back to him and he's looking at Pacquiao, he wants Pacquiao. And now that Pacquiao is not getting back to him, he just said a fight between him and, I can't remember who it was, somebody would be a good fight. And I was just like, well, okay. But I forget who it was. It was just another 147-pound. It was a quality guy. It wasn't Keith Thurman, but it was, somebody on that level. But Eddie Hearn feels that Khan is avoiding Kell Brook. I just think Khan was looking for the bigger fight. Kell Brook Amir Khan in Wembley would be huge. I don't know if it'd be 80,000, you know, seats used like it was for Carl Froch, George Groves, but it'd be a huge fight over in the UK. So contingent upon what happens, that's a fight you can look forward to quite possibly going into the fall of next year. But yeah, we know that Kell Brook is, again, not to discredit Antoine Dekery, but the reason why this fight was set up was essentially to give, you know, Kell Brook his victory lap.
Good. Yeah, Dekery has some sorts of skills. Mm-hmm. But as you said, he's not elite, and he's not really going to be elite, to be honest. Not to call him out, but
he's had his shots. He's a veteran,
yeah.
You know. So he is what he is.
And Kell Brook, I think he needs some sort of exposure. He needs to make his name a bit bigger. With that said,
fight Kell Brook is supposed to win too. You know, quite frankly,
make him look good. Put his name out there a bit.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he'll be ready for a Khan, and I'm not sure a Khan would want to see him. I wouldn't mind seeing him against somebody like a Marcos Madonna.
Just somebody,
not saying that Khan is better than Madonna, but, you know, style-wise, I don't think he's ready for Amir Khan at this point.
You know what? It's funny because I agree with you to a certain extent. I believe style-wise, I don't think they're necessarily quite ready for each other just yet. I think Khan's, first of all, Kell Brook is a big welterweight, and he's a strong welterweight. Boy, he proved that. And you know what? One thing I know about Sean Porter is he's tough and he could take a punch. Kell Brook can punch. His punch is legitimate. He wobbles Sean Porter. You just don't do that. At the same time, Khan has blinding speed. And with Virgil Hunter, I see him getting better. He still has his flaws, man. He still has his flaws.
Yeah.
He still falls in. And that's a fight where I could see him just, you know, high-speed chessing and kind of outboxing Kell Brook with his speed. But damn it, Kell Brook proved to me he's a great counterpuncher with good timing, and he has a good punch. And that's not something Khan wants to see. So I think there's a good reason why Khan's like, you know what, I don't need that fight right now. Obviously, I see why Kell Brook would want that fight. At this point, he's not going to get a Mayweather. Khan was much more in better position to get a Mayweather or Pacquiao. Kell Brook's name's not like that on an international stage to where he's going to command that fight. So for him, the biggest fight right now, the biggest realistic fight, would be Kell Brook, Amir Khan in Wembley. That would be a huge fight for Kell Brook. So, yes, it makes sense for him to go after that fight from a business standpoint. But, again, I think it's a fight that could use a little bit more seasoning, like Zito said.
Yeah.
You know, you go ahead and let Kell Brook get Antoine Dekery, let Khan fight whomever, and then it's a fight you could see towards the end of the year. I believe Khan said maybe he would like to fight Adrian Broner. I think it was somebody like that. That's what he said he wanted to fight now. So,
Well, we have to see what Adrian Broner is going to do against John Molina.
You do.
All right. Well, before we close out here, we got a couple big games tomorrow. Green Bay or Seattle?
Seattle. Defense wins championships.
Okay. Ty?
Defense wins championships, and Seattle has that 12th man that is quite unbelievable at times, so you got to go with the favorite.
Yeah, but New England versus the Colts. See?
You know, I think Andrew Luck has one more year. Not saying that. New England, I mean, this is a team that New England had better teams in the past, to be honest, that haven't made it this far. But to make a long story short, I think Andrew Luck needs one more year. My son should be proud. He's a New England fan.
There you go. Ty?
We said defense wins championships. Belichick wins championships. I think the luck has run out. One thing Andrew Luck has done in each year, he's advanced each year in his career. You know, he got to the playoffs, then he got to the divisional round. Now he's in the AFC championship game. So he's gotten a year further, or he's gotten a step further each year. But what's always happened is he's stopped at that next level. So he's going to be stopped tomorrow. And like Zito said, maybe next year he gets to the Super Bowl, but not this year. You got to go with New England.
All righty. Well, that takes us right up to our time limit. Z, you want to lead us out?
I sure do. It's as for another week. It's been a pleasure. Love being with you guys, and I'll see you next week. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone has any needs to hear any fighting words, please do call. Ty?
Just want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to Three Knuckleheads Like Us Talk Boxing. It's been a great show. Also, just to let everyone know, that fight between Deontay Wilder and Bermain Stiverns, 10 o'clock tonight on Showtime. Luis Santa Cruz is on the undercard. Bob is their co-pilot.
And, Ty, before we go, let's have something about your gym.
Oh, we still don't have the brick and mortar up yet, but my wife has just started her company, Evolve 365. She's putting a new product on the market. I can't talk too much about it yet due to copyright infringement and things of that nature. And she's found her spot for the gym, and we should be up and running within a few months.
Excellent, excellent. Well, guys, I want to thank you again for being here, and you do a great job as always. Z, the technical guru that we have. Ty, the guy that has everything at his fingertips. I really appreciate everything you do to prepare each and every week for these shows. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform and you're with a child, introduce it to them. It makes a world of difference to the guys out there. We also dedicate these programs to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hindler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Firefighter Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, and our latest entry, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs, Florida Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.
Shemalek ma yelama, shemahezah yelama, sona shene vorat fet, haku igegen ma yelama. Oh,
responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.